All right, we are recording. You're on.
Good morning, Mr. Rez. On behalf of our political science 4319 class at the University of Texas at Arlington, I, Carla Graham, would like to welcome you and say thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. I would also like to introduce to you my fellow colleague, Dan Strickland. Mr. Rez, I'll begin this interview by asking you a set of questions having to deal with your biography, then a set dealing with your political career, and the last set will focus on your views and opinion. After that, I will open the floor to questions from the audience.
First of all, good morning, UTA. I'm an alum. And thank you very much for the phone call. I didn't return it. I travel a lot. Most of it is for free.
Well, thanks for being here. Okay, so could you please tell us your full name?
Sure. My full name is Jesus Jose Federico Reyes Blanco, and you should never ask that. Jesus is my baptismal name, Jose is my confirmation name, Federico is my birth name, Reyes is my father's last name, Blanco is my mother's last name, Hernandez is my ancestry. That's the my great grandfather and so on and so forth.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Nico for short.
Okay, for the record, could you spell all of that for us?
Oh, sure. we'll just stay with F period B period. Lico, Lico, Reyes, Reyes. By order of the court in Alexandria, Louisiana in 1966, my name was changed from Federico Reyes Blanco to Frederick B. Reyes because he wanted to make it easy for me to adjust to the United States of America.
Okay, thank you. Okay, can you tell us your age and your date of birth?
I'm an actor, I never tell my age. I have a range. I go from 40 to 60. But I was born on April 4th, 1946, and anybody who looks at my website, lico.tv, knows who I am and how old I am.
Where were you born?
I was born in my mother's stomach. Well, I'm not a test tube baby, I just want to assert that fact. I was born in Canatlan, Durango, Mexico, in an adobe hut. I know my father and my mother are legitimately mine.
Okay. And can you spell that city?
Yes. Canatlan, C-A-N-A-T-L-A-N. Durango, D-U-R-A-N-G-O, that's the state. Mexico, M-E-J-I-C-O, is the original name of Mexico.
I see. Thank you. Okay, and who are your parents? Can we have their names and where they're from?
Sure. My mother, who is my greatest hero, she passed away 2 years ago, Manuela Blanco. And you want to spell it?
No.
Okay, good. Yeah. My father, who is still alive and still lives in Mexico and still harvests crops and still plows with a wooden plow and a couple of mules. His name is Julian Reyes Hernandez.
Okay, could you spell his name for us?
J-U-L-I-N, like the Julian year.
I see. Thank you. Do you have any siblings? And can you have their names and ages?
Yes, my only real sister, full sister, is Estela Reyes, and of course it's Villaseñor, V-I-L-L-A-S-E-N, that's an N with a little on top of the OR, which means that the Mexican alphabet is a little more advanced than the American alphabet because we have more letters, double L and Y.
And what's her age?
She is 2 years older, a year and a half to 2 years older than I am. Then I have, my father and my mother were separated when I was 2 years old, and I have about six other siblings who are half brothers and sisters on my father's side. My mother never got remarried or reattached.
Okay, can you tell us where you received your education?
Yes, as a matter of fact, my mother brought me across from Mexico. When I was 2 years old, I was dying of malnutrition. My mother left me in Mexico so she could come over here and make a place for us. And I didn't bring the picture, but I'll give it to the archives. There's a picture of me with my aunt holding me up because I was going to die, and I had a bone sticking out of my belly, so my education started from there, from knowing that I was going to die. You know, at 2 years old, you recognize it. She brought me across to Juarez, and I went to Sacred Heart School in El Paso, and I walked back and forth in the snow uphill both ways, 50 miles.
Wow.
Okay, across the Rio Grande. But there was no really water there because we're on the bridge. But on the way back, my education, because there's also business education to us, I would spit on boots for the GIs from Fort Bliss and then I would walk to the across the border and come back across, get a cone and a stick, and I would catch coins from the tourists as they went by, nickels, pennies, and dimes. Very few quarters back in those days. That was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so I graduated from, I didn't. I went to the seventh grade. My mother moved me to Chicago. Graduated from St. Joseph and St. Anne's School in Chicago, in back of the arts, Gage Park. Went to the secular seminary. Quigley Prep Seminary, South and Western Avenue, Chicago. And my mother yanked me out of there. She didn't want me to be a priest. Although, that's what I always wanted to do, be a priest. And I went to Jesuit High School, graduated there in 1965, in the top 10 of my class.
Careful, you're telling me.
Yeah, with Dick Azar, whose family owned Coors Beer, whose mother was later the mayor of El Paso, with the Tony Alma brothers, with the Arroyo brothers, who won the lottery, were multimillionaires, and Leo Blanchett, and Jack Schessler, and you get those names? They were all like Army, Navy, Air Force brats. And I graduated in the top 10. Dick Azar and the Tony Lama brothers didn't, so it tells you something. I still have the education, they still have the money.
Okay, and how about after that?
Graduated from Jesuit, went to Jesuit seminary in Grand Coteau, Louisiana, because I was determined I was going to be a priest. I went there for a year. My mother then proceeded to take all the coins out of my coin collection. I had the typesets of every nickel, dime, quarter, half dollar, and dollar. I'm talking about the old Buffalo nickels, the Liberty dollars. I had the whole set because when I lived in Chicago, we lived by the bus depot. So I get all those, and she took them out, brought my sister from Mexico, and they used that money as money to go see me in the seminary. When I came back, I was very distraught. Imagine how much that'd be worth. Anyway, they went to visit me and they told Father Rimes, that I was going to study to be a priest, to dedicate my life so that they would get back together, which was true. And Father Rimes said, that's not a good reason to be a priest, son. Why don't you go back into the world? When you're ready to come back for the real reasons, then come back. Besides, we have no openings for actors and engineers, which is what I wanted to be. And then I went from there, went to the College of Santa Fe, New Mexico. I went to University of Texas at El Paso. And I was a straight A student.
Wow.
Then I came to UTA. All my life I was on scholarships, either academic or work scholarships, even through high school, because we couldn't afford Jesuit. Then over here, and I will not mention any names out of due respect, the gentleman is deceased. My advisor here told me that even though you're a Mexican, I want you to understand that my door is always open to you, to help you acclimatize yourself to this structure here, because this is different, and you will be suffering academically, so I want to be there to help you. I said, okay, so I started to flunk out because I hang around the sub. Well, I'm going to flunk anyway, so I was playing bridge, hokum, hearts, and spades, and beating everybody in the sub. So obviously I was not dumb, I was just dumbed up. And then Dr. Fairchild and Dr. Everard, both of the engineer department, aerospace and civil, they said, what in the world are you doing? You're a straight A student, you come here, and all of a sudden you're failing? I said, well, I'm trying to fit in, and I'm asking all the questions I can, but I know that since I'm Mexican, I'm gonna have a hard time in this college. And said, who's told you this? I said, well, that's what I was told. I said, forget that, you're going to excel. And sure enough, they brought me back up, and I graduated. I'm a C student, probably. Math degree with a minor in civil engineering, a double minor in computer programming.
That's wonderful. And so you said you're also an alumni from this university?
I am a UTA alumnus. Graduated, I believe, in 1978. I have to look. I'm so old that it's back in the 1900s.
Okay. Are you a registered voter?
Well, not only am I a registered voter, I'm a member of the United States Elective Service Board. I got a 20-year presidential appointment by President Bush. He's a Republican, I'm a Democrat. It's the only appointment that I've ever gotten in the city, by the way. I've never been appointed to any board or commission. Of course, because I don't have enough education or training, obviously, it's kind of hard to fit me in. I've been one of the precinct judges for several elections. I'm the district, my precinct chair for the Democratic Party for my precinct. I'm on the advisory committee of Senator Royce West, an alumni here. Senator Royce West is 23rd Criminal Justice Advisory Committee. So, and to be in all those things, you kind of sort of have to be a registered voter.
All right. What's your precinct?
Precinct, I believe it's 267 or 272. So I've got it in my wallet. You know.
Okay.
But let me tell you a little bit more about, you asked if I was a registered voter. August of 1999, I believe, I brought the Justice Department to Arlington because they had a Johnson Creek election, and the information was not in Spanish. And I called the Justice Department, and they came over here and knocked on the door of the city attorney and said, hey, you're supposed to have this information in Spanish. Oh, we might. No, you will. It's a law. Lulek called us. So I would say I'm a real staunch registered voter.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we're going to change the gear towards your political career. Now, when we tried to locate your bio, we couldn't figure out what your position was. So,
usually it's laying down, snoring.
I mean, do you have a salaried position?
With who?
With the city of Arlington.
Oh. No, but I'm running for mayor this year, and if I win this year, which would be my 12th election to lose, if I lose it, I won an election as precinct chair, so actually I've tied Tommy Vandergrift for the most elections he's run, and I've run this year. I'll be running for mayor. And then I'll be paid $75 a month, you know. But I don't have a position with the city. You want to know about my political career?
Yes. And we'll go ahead and let my colleague Dan go ahead and ask you those questions.
All right.
You're a staff representative for the Texas Public Workers Association, is that correct?
That is true.
What does that entail?
Texas Public Workers Association is like a union. It's an association that's owned by the employees rather than a union that's, you know, owned by a board of directors and so on and so forth. I help people who have a grievance against them, or they have a grievance against the city of Dallas, the city of Arlington, city of Grand Prairie, Dallas, DFW from airport, Austin, Houston, all of those. I mainly practice my work in Dallas area, and that's a paid position, but very, very minimal because I'm just being brought in. I was brought in to help to organize. I'm not an organizer. You need a certificate for that, but to help organize Grand Prairie. And then since I'm a civil rights investigator, and since I've been trained by the Department of Justice, EEOC, FBI, Community Relations Service, and so on and so forth, they decided, well, you might be able to help our people. So I get paid when I do one of those cases.
So are you not at liberty to tell us how much that is?
Oh, sure. Right now I'm getting paid. I teach combat defensive driving. I tell my students always, turn off your cell phone before you go to class. I get paid right now $50 every time I represent someone, whether it's a minute or 2 hours. And I get reimbursed for any accessory expenses that I may have. I get paid $50 a day, and it's short days from 10 to 4 to come into the office. Right now, they started me off at one day every Thursday. I'm there unless I'm doing something else like today. So I work Monday, so y'all owe me.
Okay, how does that job fit into the political arena?
Well, in Arlington, for instance, the Texas Public Workers Association was an organization that actually helped to get the pay raises for the employees of the municipal city of Arlington. We help only uniformed, non-uniformed employees. And it was through an investigation that I helped conduct, I think. You know, you never know what really was a catalyst. That the lower grades that were living substandardly, that were getting paid enough so they qualified for food stamps or subsidized housing, those positions are no longer in existence in the city of Arlington. So, that's almost like working civil rights, but, it's actually being, with the association. And your question is, how does it fit into my political arena, is that what the question is? It's part of it. The political arena is extensive. I mean, I'm the state civil rights co-chair of the Oversight and Review Committee for the state of Texas. I'm the civil rights chair for District 21, which is all of North Texas, Tarrant County, Lulac redistricted. So now District 21, it's Tarrant County, Clay County, Johnson County, Hood County, Arrieth County, and Parker County, whereas before it was just Fort Worth. This has happened within the last half a year. In that position, I get to challenge a lot of issues of civil rights and to be contemporaneously, we'll start with today. This morning, I am taking a letter to the Arlington Chamber of Commerce because minorities, and this happened to women a long time ago, and happened to African Americans when you guys were furniture. Remember that? Yeah. You know, the Mexican Constitution outlawed slavery. Did you know that? Yeah. So the revolution for Texas to secede was a lot more than we imagine. It's more of economics. When I tell that to African Americans at the NAACP, they think, oh, brings a difference. You should read the book, Lies My Teacher Told Me. Anyway, but I'm sure that Dr. Gutierrez has expounded on that kind of stuff extensively. If he doesn't, he can, I guarantee you. Anyway, I'm going to the Chamber of Commerce because I asked for an open records as to how many, what was the composition in ethnicity of the Chamber of Commerce, the Commission of Business Bureau, and the Convention Center. And I asked from the city. The city said, we don't have those records, which is very unusual because the city of Arlington gets $600,000 from the taxpayers every year for economic development. So there's a mandate with that, and there's a fiduciary duty with that through the Department of Justice.
Right.
Okay? They would not answer, so I wrote a letter saying that, this is unbelievable. I'm just amazed that you will not answer this. I sent it to the Attorney General's office in Austin, and then my local civil rights, my local chapter here in Lulac said, you're out of your jurisdiction. I said, excuse me? So I thought, okay, I'll wait. So now that I'm running for mayor, and now that we have a new district, and now we have a new council, which is international, which is formed, it's got Deborah Lott, African-American, is a temporary president of the Sulawesi chapter. Hispanic gentleman, whom I'm helping with the Fort Worth ISD problems that happened 3 weeks ago, where 20 kids got arrested, 20 Hispanic kids, and taken to jail without their parents knowing. That's a case that I'm handling for them. And this is free of charge. All these issues are occurring, so we formed this chapter. Andrea Elliott, German of descent, Austrian, she says. She speaks the Deutsche Wissen, was es los. And she's Vergesen. By the way, I'm multilingual. Somebody speaks two languages is bilingual, somebody speaks more than two languages is a multilingual, somebody speaks one language in whatever country is a redneck. hey, either that or it's just, verbally challenged, vocabulary challenged. But anyway, I'm asking why, with this letter, how come that request has not been answered, my request. And also there's a movement to do a lot with economic development with all the community of Arlington. And, I've been in Arlington 33 years, and I'm really qualified, especially on civil rights, and I've not been invited to the table. So I'm asking why I'm not invited to the table. I want to meet with the board and tell them what my company is a party company. We'll get into it eventually. But I formed the first portable DJ company in the country, yes, according to Dun & Bradstreet. And I'm having a hard time doing parties in Arlington. What's wrong with this picture? And I've been a member of the Chamber of Commerce and an ambassador of the Chamber of Commerce for over 20 years. So, the political is a lot about this. And one thing I did yesterday, a lady, and civil rights is more than just about Hispanics and African Americans. Pamela Bickle, who is one of the wealthiest Hispanic women in this town, if not in the Metroplex, is a multimillionaire. She owns an Inca Soil Environmental. They did not grant her a bid on a project to do some asbestos recovery. She is an environmental company. And they said that she didn't have OSHA credentials and she hadn't worked in the school districts in over 2 years and she was not qualified. And she called me. She's a new member of the council. She's the secretary of the new council. And I said, I went over to them and I asked them if I could have the specs. And then he said, oh, sure, Ms. Knox will give it to you. Well, then Ms. Knox called me yesterday and said, we can't give you that. We have to do an open record. Said, but your lady said, I didn't have to do an open record. So I'm sitting right there. So I wrote Mac Byrne a letter and I said, look, I am dismayed because I feel like I was treated differently. And this is a multimillionaire lady that has a house in Lake Arlington that has a swimming pool, a sunken bar, a tennis court, and a huge yard, and it's right on the lake. So, and in Arlington, and I can't give you the name of the family for anonymity, but there is a family that's worth $3.1 billion. Obviously, they're white, otherwise we know who they were. One of their kids when the children died on the way to the hospital because the emergency vehicle got there late, according to the open records that I did, they asked me to investigate. Notice, I never got paid, never asked for anything. I don't even know if they voted for me when I run. They never donated to my campaigns. Sure enough, last year, the ambulance service was changed in this town. That death happened 5 years ago, death on route to the hospital. So, and this is a white family. See, in 40, 60 years, civil rights are going to protect white Anglo-Saxon Protestants because the loss of civil rights protect the underrepresented. And they will be underrepresented. So we need to be careful. I tell people, you need to love your neighbor because you never know. You know, heard the story, who you're going to meet on the way up when you're on your way down? Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm sorry. I divulge, but you know, these are real issues. You ask me, you know, we can talk about way back in 1982. I just finished taking some orphans out to bowling, overnight bowling. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, I was coming by my house on I-20 in Matlock. Now, I used to be a civil engineer in training for the highway department. 9 years I built highways because I was studying civil engineering here. And I got arrested for allegedly crossing a stop sign. This is a story, by the way, that passed a profiler bill at the legislature, 77th legislature last year. It's on the record. They stopped me, and now I said, why stop me? He said, we know who you are. I said, well, of course you do. I've got logos on my car. I said, Party Supportable, Lico Reyes. My personal license plate, which says Lico R. I have a house, brand new house right here. I'm driving a brand new car. This is, I was driving a 1978-98 Oldsmobile. And I have a company that's worth about $250,000, portable DJ company. I said, so you know, of course you know who I am. I said, no, we know who you are. I said, let me show you my ID card from LTV Corporation because I'm a computer programmer analyst for LTV. I have a security clearance from the FBI. Put your hand down, Mr. Reyes. We know who you are. He said, so you're a computer programmer. I thought you were a DJ. I said, well, you know, I'm very versatile. I'm a Renaissance man. Needless to say, they took me out, they handcuffed me. They took me to the cell right here in the old cell block, and they stripped me of all my clothes, and they had me take my medal and my scapular. Scapular is a Catholic cloth thing. They had me take it out, and they let me go to the bathroom, okay? Now, I understand there's a trap in the bathroom so they can trap your feces in case, you know, you might have swallowed some drugs. And this is not very nice, okay? It wasn't meant to be very nice. And I kept telling them, I said, I've got attorneys, let me call my attorney. Oh, you watch too many movies. I said, but I have a right. Sir, you watch too much TV. You know, we know who you are. So finally, they let me talk to Carl Rocky Walton, who later became city councilman, Kappa Sigma fraternity brother of mine here from UTA. You know, and Thomas Martel, Kappa Sigma fraternity brother of mine here from UTA. And the next day, in the front page of both newspapers, local entertainer gets arrested for being a convicted murderer from California. The police apologized, but there's an investigation ongoing, and so on and so forth. Don Gladden, the guy who used to do all the redistricting for the state of Texas, a famous attorney that passed away a couple of years ago, he called me and said, I need to take your case in a contingency. I said, contingency, what's that? He said, means I get paid half of what you get. Fine. He said, he visited with me. He said, how much do you want? I said, I want to get paid because somebody went through my briefcase and my trunk of my car, and the Kelly McKnight says it's the police. The police say it's Kelly McKnight. Somebody went through it. My license plate was all torn up. I said, hey, it's okay, fine. But I can get you $2 million. I said, no, I want to live in this town. And the lady who arrested me is the first female officer in this town, Amy Picard, that I know of. If I file that much, she will lose her job. I'm defending my civil rights at the sake of her civil rights, and I'm not going to do that. It was her lieutenants and her sergeants and her captains that gave the law, the ruling to arrest me. So, you know, they're wrong. So we filed for $750, we got it, letter of apology, and this expunged by record. That's the only time in my entire life I've ever been arrested. So you wanted to know about the politics and everything. Arlington is responsible for making me a civil rights activist. You know, the making of a Mexican militant, this town. And I was running for city council against Paula Hightower, and a former skinhead who I hired as a young DJ in training for me because he hated Mexicans and blacks. I said his mother was my Shaja Gabor lookalike, and she said, Lico, this guy is smart. He's coming in from Michigan because he's in trouble over there. You know, a lot of red gangs are after him. So I trained him, and we worked with me. He wanted to be my chief of staff for my election. I said, sure. He was sitting at a bench, and he overheard Mayor Richard Green of this, and this is also on the record at Austin, on the same profile bill. And he heard allegedly, because it's on a taped affidavit which the FBI has, and the Attorney General's Office has, and the Star Telegram has, and I'm sure Mr. Green has it because he used to work there, or he might still work for the Star Telegram. He allegedly said that effing Mexican, the stupid wetback, will never get anywhere in this town. He tries, but it never get anywhere in this town. You know, and he was telling this to Paula Hightower because she was afraid I was going to beat her because my credentials were pretty good for a poor little Mexican wetback, you know, pretty good credentials, pretty good education. So anyway, those are the two reasons that I think I became National Civil Rights Man of the Year for LULAC, because that was a fire under me to not be complacent, because I was happy working with the system. Within the system, that's going to happen. But you know, it will happen, but there are some guys like me and some gals like me and like Dr. Gutierrez and like Cesar Chavez, they're going to push the envelope to make sure that justice is done. As long as we do with the understanding that we don't know everything and we have to deal with what we do know. Let the facts speak, ma'am. Strictly the facts, you know, dragnet.
That's right.
I'm sorry. I may be telling you more than I have time for.
Well, you moved on to the next question. When you received the LULAC Award for Man of the Year, did that come as a surprise?
Yes, it did, because see, my local, my state and my district director, they had not written the letter asking them to accept my bid as National Civil Rights Man of the as National Man of the Year. I was named State Man of the Year, and I was City Man of the Year, District Man of the Year, and State Man of the Year, and then I was up for National. And my credentials are pretty good. The credentials being that in Tulia, Texas, they had a bunch of Tulia police officers called the Texas Alcohol Liquor Board, and they had busted a graduation party. And they came in because children are not supposed to drink without the presence of their adult parent. I mean, that's all. I have no problem with that. But when they came in and asked everybody to get on their hands and knees. So children 5, 7, 9, and 10 were down on their hands and knees with their hands over their back. Needless to say, I have a reputation across Texas, so they called me and asked me if I could come. To make a long story short, all $30,000 worth of indictments or worth of fines were deleted, completely abolished, dismissed by the district attorney. It was also the prosecuting attorney of that particular case. Two TABC officers were given a pink slip, the ones that led the raid. One was this Hispanic officer. So, you know, just because I'm Hispanic doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to look out for my people or look out at civil rights. It's not the color of the skin, it's the color, the content of the character, Martin Luther King. Anyway, so I had just done that. And so, you know, and I had developed, and I have it here for you, a LULAC survival packet, which shows any city, any minority, how to go about doing open records, how to do a press conference, how to submit a request for an investigation or a complaint, what the legal terms and the dictionary terms are for racism, for prejudice, for hate crimes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's about 20 pages. And the Department of Justice Community Relations Service, who helps put the Civil Rights Manual for LULAC, is going to put that as part of their next addition to the LULAC Civil Rights Manual. So, you know, I'd accomplished some things. Well, but they didn't. So the national president was very dismayed that I had not. So he, at his mandate, that's just an appointment that he makes, he said, Lico, you're going to have all that clutter on your side, the badges, you know. I said, no, sir. He said, we're going to honor you. We have a special honor for you. So please come dressed neatly and freshened up. So I went and put on a nice suit and took all the stuff off of it. And so it came as a surprise to me.
Excuse me, if I may ask you once again, which city did that take place in, that incident?
Tulia, Texas. It's a very famous story. Tulia, Texas.
Can you spell that for us?
Yes, Tulia. That is the same place that about 10% of the blacks were arrested of a cocaine drug trafficking, and there was never any cocaine ever presented as evidence, and most of them have been overturned, and they're still returning some. It's continuously on the books, and the way they found out about me is I went there to be a support element for the NAACP and ACLU on that issue of discrimination with the famous Tulia drug raid for the people who are helping those, and they're whites, they're Friends of Justice, they're white people. You know, they're helping our people, because see, civil rights is not, it's not about the color. Again, it's about who has representation, who has money, who has resources. I don't need somebody to protect my rights. I guarantee you I can do my own. But, you know, as I've told you, I've helped people that, my chief of staff, Andre Elliott, German. The sheriff's department in Johnson County wouldn't investigate the fact that her husband disappeared for 2 days. I called him up, I said, sir, I'm a former grand jury sheriff, and I think it would look real bad if you got investigated for not checking on this disappearance. Well, you know, within 3 hours, they had horses, they had dogs, they had boats, they had helicopters, they had men traversing 30, 40 acres looking for Charlie Elliott. They found him 6 months later because a dog brought a skull down to a house, and that was the skull of Charlie Elliott, her husband. And they, you know, a year and a half later, she called me up and she said, Lico, you've been my friend, you were there with me. What can I do for Lulek? I said, oh boy, I got a civil rights investigation on the dropout in the state of Texas, in Arlington, Texas. I've got apartments that had no air conditioning for the summer of 1999, and I'm working with HUD and the Department of Justice to rectify those things. You want to help? I need your computers and your printing machine, and I tell you what, and now she's a civil rights chair for Arlington. White Anglo-Saxon, German. Anyway, does that answer your question?
Yes.
And I don't know where we're at with this. I'm telling you some heavy stuff because, you know, I think historians and you are here studying history and government. You need to know what's really happening. It can happen to me. It can happen to you in Mexico. It can happen to you 40, 50 years from now. If the blacks and the Hispanics don't decide to work together, we'll be killing each other off. Belfast, Ireland will be nothing. Because General Patton is credited with saying, send me some Mexicans. They'll die and they'll fight. So we've been given a bunch of awards during the wars for valor.
Thank you.
How did you come to join LULAC, and what does it mean to you as an organization?
When Terry Mesa, the president of LULAC, wrote a letter to the Star Telegram, a letter to the editor, that they, you know, should be more considerate of, you know, of race and ethnicity. That's when I said, what is LULAC? And from then on, I was a member. I didn't get active until about 4 or 5 years ago when the Arlington chapter asked me to look into the civil rights issues on the dropout, which is actually 50% of the state of Texas, not 1.3 or 0.6 as has been told.
So you're saying the dropout rate in Texas is 50%?
Yeah, not only do I say it, but Kathleen Leos, the director of the No Child Left Behind for President Bush in Washington, D.C., said that same thing at the National Convention in Houston at the LULAC Convention. She said, and I went up to her and said, why did you say this? She said, Lico, I've been around LULAC and I've been around you long enough to know what the real numbers are.
Is that the amnesty plan you were talking about?
That's the amnesty plan, which is on my website.
Right.
I have a, did you read it?
Chris.
That's it in a nutshell. We have had amnesty for us Mexicans and for other people from other countries. We've been here illegally and they've given us amnesty. So rather than prosecute the people that are forging documents to show a lower dropout, and rather than having the children suffer that, and rather than having the state suffer the lack of funds when they find out what scoundrels we are, why don't we have amnesty for the school districts from Washington, D.C., and for the people that are falsifying documents, because they are. I mean, you know, we know they are. We have given amnesty, they gave amnesty to Enron and Myrant and WorldCom and ADS and, you know, and I could go on and on, there's about 21 of them. So if we can give amnesty to the rich, why not give amnesty to the poor?
Is LULAC the type of organization that you would encourage those of Hispanic nationality or any other nationality to join, and how would they benefit?
Well, I've had a chance to be invited to the NAACP Greenville banquet 2 years ago as a spokesman for their gala, and they loved me. I had, you know, resounding response from them. The Asian community in Dallas, the community invited me to come and speak to them on civil rights, and they had 4 or 5 newspapers that wrote about what I talked about. So, you know, yeah, I think so. People ask me, what's a LULAC-er? Let me tell you what a LULAC-er is. A LULAC-er is whatever a LULAC-er wants to be. I am as far civil rights oriented and as open and as vehement about civil rights and what's right and wrong, because, well, I studied to be a Jesuit priest. I know what's right and wrong. I owe nothing to anybody in this world except my Heavenly Father. That's the only person I suck up to. I don't suck up to the President of Dulac. I don't suck up to the President of the United States. I don't suck up to my priest. I said, because, you know, there are problems there in every respect. So a Dulacer can be also somebody that indoctrinates, that comes in and diminishes the work of civil rights of Dulac. You know, just because we're Dulac doesn't mean that you are, you know, the color of law or the code of color. You know, it could be, you know, you could be somebody that's in there to break something up. You know, right now, for instance, I just took my first class, the FBI Citizens Academy. It's a second class given in Dallas, and so I'll be the second class of graduates. But why am I getting involved in, you know, taking that? I'm a graduate of the Citizens Police Academy. I'm a graduate of the Fire Academy. We need to be involved in everything. And I tell people, some people don't like the fact that I'm president of UNAUSA Arlington, United Nations affiliate, because they say, well, those people are a bunch of terrorists, and, you know, da, da, da. I say, you know what? What better thing than a guy like me or a gal like you that has a good conscience for what's right and wrong to be in that group? Because leadership is what's going to lead that group to where it's going to be. So I disagree with, you know, some of the Lulac referendums, and I voice my opinion. I voice them through the channels. And then if it doesn't happen, then I go and do it as UNAUSA, or as Lico Rey as the candidate, or as Lico Rey as the disc jockey, you know, whatever I want to do. Hey, it's my life.
What other organizations are you a member of?
Right now, currently, president of UNAUSA Arlington area, Lulac, I'm a member of the Knights of Columbus, president of Concerned Taxpayers of Arlington. I'm an ambassador for the Arlington Chamber of Commerce, believe it or not. Sometimes I probably wish I didn't. I've taken the FBI Citizens Academy. I'm a member of this Fire Citizens Academy Alumni Board. I'm on the Board of Directors of Arlington Human Service United Way. I'm on the Board of Directors of the Arlington Literacy Council. I'm the Hispanic liaison for the League of Women Voters. And I'm Mexican male Catholic, so, you know, don't even go there, okay? I don't know. That's a relatively good list.
Okay. I understand that you.
No, sorry about the eyes, but you asked me. You know, I hate people that I.
Yeah.
Because it makes it means it hurts.
I understand that you wish to promote a sister cities program between Vietnam and Nigeria. Can you further elaborate on those reasons?
There's a correction. Between Arlington and Nigeria, Arlington and Vietnam.
Correct.
Arlington has one sister city. Something or other. It's the only sister city Arlington has. Arlington, which touted itself as the Olympic bidder, has no other sister cities. That's like me saying, hey, let me tell you about how to have a baby, and I'm a guy. Come on. You know, you've got to get real. If they want to talk about the economy, if they want to talk about the world market, if they want to talk about the Olympics, if they want to talk about education, about science, about anything, you've got to bring in Koreans, you've got to bring in Mexicans, you've got to bring in people from Africa, you've got to bring in Russians, you've got to bring Germans. Best scientists were Germans, right? We stole the best Germans after World War II. Okay? The reason, in Vietnam is a large population in Arlington. I would say, conservatively, they are 6% of the population of Arlington. And according to civil rights laws, when that is found out, information should be in Vietnamese, in the commonality language. So I think that, I also propose, we have a sister city in Mexico. It's a half-sister city. I brought the keys at the request of the council. I brought the keys from Canatlan, Durango, Mexico, my hometown, over here, and I gave it to them. And it's still City Hall, you can still see the keys, but they never completed that arrangement to the face of Mexico. You know, come on. You know, why do they want to do it? Because Lico Reyes brought it? Because it might give me some credibility? Or is it because they're not interested in other nations? And I bet all of you are from different nations. What part of Africa do you think you hail from?
I have no idea, but if I had a choice, I'd say Kenya.
Kenya. What part of Germany do you think you come from? Or where? What?
I'm from England.
England? Ah, I'll ask you. Albert?
I have no idea.
You have no idea? Mm-hmm. You are very lucky. You don't have to be pinpointed. You know, they don't. But you have a complex of you.
Durango.
Durango, Canadran Durango. Muy bien, Alacrán.
Zacatecas.
Ay.
I have no idea.
You have no idea?
I have no idea.
My mom's from Korea, my dad's from Hong Kong.
Korea?
Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico. Hey, qué chévere. Hey. Oye, coño, hombre, coño.
Germany.
Germany, I speak as a Deutsch, I'm visiting.
Nein.
Nein, sprechen. Was ist los? Das ist Dummkopf, ja!
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah?
England.
And
my great-great-grandfather brought the continental
army. There you go. My grandfather was Spaniard. He was a tall guy. My mother was born in the United States, but you know, the rest of my family is Aztec. Mm. Okay? It's a nation.
Yes.
The Indian nations are nations,
yes.
Right? So why do I want sister cities? It's the right thing to do. We all belong together. Grand Prairie has more sister cities than we do. And they're smaller.
Now, we're unclear about the water challenge or water shortage issues. Can you provide us with the involvement in regards to that matter?
Sure. And
what's your 20-year potable water plan?
Well, now remember, I have a mathematics degree with a minor in civil engineering here. The reason I have a math degree is because I signed up to go to Vietnam. When I came to my advisor and I said, hey, Vietnam has started. I am going to go die for my country. And at that time, it was Marion Jacobs, head of financial aid, and said, did you hear what you just said, Lico? Freddie, he used to call me Freddie. I said, yeah, I want to go die for my country. He said, why don't you think about that? Let me put you through ROTC, and you can learn how to make the enemy die for their country. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. So I went through ROTC. I was ready to get commissioned, and they called off Vietnam. And I said, wait a minute. I am ready to be commissioned. I graduated. I used government resources to go and be something for the country that made this possible for me. Because I am a poor guy from Mexico, who almost died of hunger. And I'm here. This is great. So I joined the Texas State Guard. And I retired as a captain, company commander, 105th FP Battalion, 1st Defense Group, which makes me, curiously enough, a veteran. I'm a veteran without even having to serve, and because that's the law in the state of Texas, you know. And your question was again?
The 20-year potable plan.
The water plan, okay. So yeah, it has nothing to do with the water plan. Well anyway, in my civil engineering studies, we learn about you know, hydrology and fluid mechanics and all, and city building and so on and so forth, and the potability of water. We went over and studied the plant of the water plant over here. We went to study the water plants where they have recycled water and so on and so forth. The island of Cyprus, island, means it's in the middle of the water, has having a water drought. The island of Cyprus. Now, doesn't it make you wonder, what's going on here? And it is predicted that the next diamond and uranium of the world, the thing that people will fight wars over, is going to be potable water. Okay? We are consuming our water resources at a much, potable water resources, at a much higher volume than we are being able to get water. What happened several years, 3 or 4 years back, when they had a water pipe bust somewhere? We were in a crisis. Man, people were jumping up and down. And the League of Women Voters let me be their water liaison for the water, it's called Last Drop Symposium that was held here at UTA. Water is important. And I think we need to look at all the streams and everything. We need to do things, we need to think out of box. We're not doing it. You know, we're still complacent until something happens like 9-1-1. All of a sudden we want bigger government to protect us. Duh! Bigger government protects everybody. Little government protects only those who have money. Any other questions?
No, we're going to, we'd like to thank you for your response. We're going to change gears for a moment. Could you please tell us why you choose to run for mayor of Arlington again and again? Mm-hmm. How many times have you run, and will you run until you win?
Abraham Lincoln lost 14 elections. Let me tell you why I run. The first time that I ran, there was a gentleman, and I'm not going to mention his names for anonymity, that allegedly was beating his wife. She came to me and she told me she was beating him, He was beating her. He said, Lico, I'm going to give you my autograph picture, but don't show it to anybody because my husband will know that I know you. And she was an actress like me. And I don't want, and I want you to run against him because I don't want him to be reelected. And three of us, and I'm not going to tell you those names because then you'll be able to say what I'm talking about, ran against that individual. I brought up the drug issue. I said, it's the drugs a problem. I own a DJ company, and people dealing drugs in my under my nose, because I'm like real stupid. I don't know what drugs are. I mean, you know, I'm Mexican, but at Six Flags Over Texas, I was walking around with a little thing sticking out of my mouth. They said, what is it? I said, what's it? Twig I picked up over there. Where is it? They're right there. I said, you know what that is? No, it's marijuana. I'm Mexican. I'm supposed to know what this is. I'm sorry. You know, it's right there. Anyway. So I brought up the drug problem because drugs really cost me, I would say, hundreds of thousands of dollars. People that were working for me went out and told my employees that I was dealing drugs and that I was going to go bankrupt. And I wasn't. But I put two and two together and I did a sting operation at my own office and I found the drug dealers. But they left with my clients. A lot of my clients would rather believe a white than a Mexican who obviously, you know, the reason I got money is because I'm a drug dealer. Remember, that's why I was arrested. Anyway, so I brought the drug problem, now we have a drug test force. I brought the gang problem. I used to be in gangs in El Paso, the 13s and the 4Fs, different territories, because in El Paso I had two choices. I walked through gang territory, no matter where we lived, and I got beat up every day. And I got tired of telling my mom, I fell in the fall, that's where my tooth is broken. I'm sorry about this scrape, mom, I slipped on the sidewalk. After a while you get tired of excuses. Now, I never killed anybody, stole anything, or destroyed any property, but I had to be in a gang, okay, to survive. That was the way it was. So now we have a gang task force. Oh, by the way, when I was telling them there was a drug problem, at the Board of Realtors, we had a forum, and I told them, I could hear them chuckling. Right after that, I went to Chuck's grocery store right here on Madlock and Secretary Road, and everybody was scurrying around. I said, what's the matter? I said, there's a drug deal going on over there at Japanese Motors or Asian Motors or whatever. I said, really? I called the police. There's a drug deal. Well, we know, but we don't know who owns that property yet, so we cannot move on it yet. It's under an advisement right now. So that was drug problems. And if you remember, Richard Green's daughter of this town was busted for having more cocaine than she could consume herself. But she went and got some immediate treatment, and immediately her record was clean. Michael Gillespie, the head of the school board, his son got busted. He didn't know that, so his son's got a record. He's African American. Okay? So I knew there was a drug problem. I was a Kappa Sig. Our fraternity brothers were telling about a drug bust and illicit sex bust over at one of the country clubs that I'm going to mention their name. And we knew about it. We're chuckling about it. My God, these are the rich people. They got drugs. So drugs is not just a problem for the poor, it's a problem for everybody. The Family and Youth Commission. I was an advisor for Dallas Youth at Risk. And I said, we have youth at risk. Now we have Family and Youth Commission. We joined the Film Commission for a little bit. The Transit Commission, you know, they asked for my plan. I drew a plan of what we need. We need small buses to get people around to food and to entertainment and to work and to hospitals and to schools. You know, and I brought it up, and they made a copy of it. So obviously, I'm pretty smart. They called me up and said, go make a copy of your plan. It's real simple, man. It's, you know, it's transit. I studied that in engineering. I did that with the highway department. They have used a lot of my ideas. And I bring things that nobody else will bring. I'll bring things about the sister city. Who else is going to bring that up? Who else is going to bring the water symposium? They don't know. They're not knowledgeable. For instance, I'm a guy, okay? There are gals. There are some things you're going to bring up that I would not think about because it's inherent in our makeup. It has nothing to do with, you know, I'm smarter than them. It's just the environment that I was raised in, my training, my education. And Dr. Alan Sachs, in his book, which is used as a textbook right here at the University of Texas at Arlington, says, Lico Reyes can be described as one of those colorful, engaging, indispensable political characters that every city in America needs. Now, they used the picture of me when I was put on the hits, which was seen by 30 million people many years before I ran for office. Okay, that's a picture of them. And the League of Women Voters people say, we want to vote for you, but we don't want you to get elected. Why not? Because we won't know what's going on, okay? So, you know, I would say the reason I run is because I'm an American citizen, I have a right to run, and it embarrasses the heck out of the establishment when I tell them what's right.
Okay, so you will run until you win?
Yes, definitely. Or until I die, you know, and you know what? I'm gonna live a lot longer than the people that are voting against me now.
Okay. For the sake of finishing the interview, we have We have a large amount of questions to get through, so if I won't offend you, could we just stick to like brief answers?
Yeah, as you can see, I'm one of those colorful characters that Dr. Peter was saying, some of the people, it's hard to, you have to drag stuff out of them. You don't have to drag stuff out of me. I'm not acting. This is like, really, this is coming from my heart. Go ahead.
We want to make sure we just get everything.
You bet. Well, okay. You got 3 months.
Okay. Can you tell me in what way will winning the mayorship help the Hispanic population of Arlington, for that matter, or the state of Texas?
Yes. It'll show, if there were to be a miracle, and God would grant me that I would win, it would show the rest of the communities in the Metroplex and the rest of the state of Texas that an individual, male or female, who was well-prepared, educated, who was a golden child until he or she got involved in politics and tweaking their noses, because of their training, education, preparation, would become the mayor of this town. O.K. Carter said to me one time at his conference when they interviewed me, he said, Lico, you are better trained, better educated, and better prepared to be in city council than all the people that are in city council at this time, and that was many years ago. So yeah, it'll show that justice can be done.
Okay, what other political positions have you ran for?
I've run for city council. I've run for city council, a total of 12 times, 5 times for mayor, so 7 times for city council.
Okay, do you think that you provide a strong voice for the Hispanic youth to use as an inspiration to excel?
I believe I do, otherwise I would stop. The moment that I think that my message is a selfish message and I'm doing it for ego for me, that's the day I stop and I move to another town where I can help.
Okay, and what words of wisdom could you use to give those youths that have quit or are considering quitting school?
I would say that they need to realize that they're the future not only of themselves but also of their kids. And I live by this motto: what does it profit an individual, man or a woman, if he or she gains the whole world, all the riches, and suffer the loss of their immortal soul?
Let's see, what is the reality check on the present cost of the dropout rate in Arlington?
The dropout rate is, and I don't have the Edra figures, but it's billions of dollars a year. We lose so many kids because the dropout is 50%. Those children are not gonna have productive lives. They're gonna be incarcerated, they're gonna be on drugs, they're gonna be in probation, they're gonna die. There's so much loss, and it's in the billions of dollars.
Is that in the state of Texas or here in Arlington?
Go to www.edra.org. It's in the state of Texas, and it's throughout the country. Texas has got, right now, the third to fifth largest dropout rate in the country, and Vermont has the highest graduation rate in the country.
Vermont.
Oh,
that's surprising. Could you tell us if you are a mentor?
I guess not officially, but you know, anybody wants to talk to me, I refuse them. I didn't call you because I was traveling, you know. And I must be something because Dr. Gutierrez asked me to be here. And when I found out, I thought it was just a class I was going to talk to you, like Dr. Ellen Sachs asked me to talk to their classes. But when I found out this is a historic event and that I'm one of a very few chosen, it blew my mind because I'm thinking, you know, I don't think of myself like that. I think of myself as just one of many people that is doing and trying to do things for everybody.
Okay, I understand that you are Catholic. And how does your faith prepare you for all the strains of working through your endeavors?
Very simply, my Catholic faith, you notice I wear the Sacred Heart of Jesus where I was consecrated, my federal badge and my Texas deal, and my heart's right there, right under all of this. Because I studied to be a Jesuit priest, and because I studied theology, not only theology, theology is the study of God, not only that of Christianity, but Buddhism and atheism and agnosticism and Muslimism and the whole thing. And we if you don't deny your God and your religion at least once in your lifetime, you're not really a true believer. You don't have true faith. You're just following your nose. But, you know, I think that I've been very, very, very lucky. And I cannot judge anybody else but by what I know and how prepared I am. Everybody works with the gifts that they've developed and they've used. And, you know, the Catholic religion is about forgiveness and love. The two greatest commandments being love God. Second commandment, love one another. It makes it very simple.
That's so true. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Reyes.
Call me Lico.
Okay,
I'm just a Lico.
Lico, I feel like I would be doing you a disservice if I didn't talk to you about your comedic genius. How on earth did you fall into that field?
I used to ask questions in high school all the time, and you know, I get in trouble. When I left the seminary, when they kicked me out of seminary, I said, "Can I take my outfit with me? You know, my robes?" And they said, "Well, what would you want them?" I said, "Because, you know, I feel like my calling is not finished." And when we were growing up in El Paso, we would Carlos James Simpson and David Kilgore and I, we'd walk around and we pretend like we were telling, "Hey, ¿cómo está, Nini? Muy bien, Nini. Vente, Marini." Because see, being Italian was a lot more fun than being Mexican. In fact, when I was a kid, I understand the African Americans a lot more than you think. The white kids in Jesuit high school would make fun of us because we brought tortillas and we brought different food that they had, and we spoke funny. So I found myself in the bathtub one time. We don't have bathtub, you know. We'd rent a place to go, you know, take showers and stuff like that. And I took Clorox and I put it in the water with me. I wanted to be lighter skinned, so we fit in, you know. And you know, and comedy rises out of the pain in the heart and the soul. When I do a routine, it's about real things. We just put a little different twist on it and make people laugh. That's real comedy. I don't use the toilet language and all that expletives, because that's a nervous laughter. If I mention male and female parts, y'all will giggle, but it's nervous. But if I say something like, you know, my mother, I used to tell me when we went to Mexico, "Son, shut up! What's the matter with you?" And then my father would be riding the bicycle to the labor, and he would say, "Dice tu mamá que te acharapes o te aguasumara." See, so I think, you know, that's when I started. So I started doing priest comedy long before Guido Sarducci on Saturday Night Live started doing, you know, Don Novello started doing Guido Sarducci. My mother called me up and said, "Son, you're on television, national television." "No, I'm not, Mom. I'm doing nightclubs." I said, "Son, I saw you." I said, "Well, yeah, Jay Leno or..." No, it was that time, what's his name? Johnny Carson probably has some little clips of comedians. I said, "No, it's you." I looked and I said, "My God, the guy looks like me. That's what I look like. I'll be darned, that's what I look like." But it's, I've always made people laugh. This is probably, I imagine, one of the funnier interviews that you guys have had, right?
Yes.
Okay? See, if we don't laugh at our misery, we're gonna be miserable.
Okay, what is your most noteworthy comedic impersonation, and could you bless us with a sample?
Well, somebody's copying me, but sure, I can do that. I this was my very first routine that I did on satellite television, and I'm gonna write on one of these things here that I'm gonna leave with you. I don't know, you know, I thought I could be here and talk to you a little bit about morals and ethics, you know, and I want to talk basically about the pigs. That's the people in general, pigs. And of course, you know, pigs, they're in a mess. That's morals, ethics, and sticky situations. So the pigs come to me and they talk to me on my private telephone line, also on my public telephone line, that they can talk to me, you know, and then they send me some money, you know. I will give them some advice. Now, the advice may not fit the problem, but hey, it's free, you know, what do you expect? So pigs, they're in the mess, they come to me, and then I give them extreme union. That means, it's all right, you're all together, don't worry yourself about it, everything's gonna be just fine.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Reyes, we would like to now ask you some questions with respect to your views and opinions on politics. and we're going to wrap it up, so could you please keep it brief? Thank you. We would appreciate it.
My mother always told me to always wear a clean pair of briefs in case I get in an accident. That's the first thing I'm going to mess up when I get in an accident. Now, and what was the question? Go ahead.
We're just going to talk about your views and opinions a little bit. To you, what is the definition of leadership?
Leadership is being the very best you can be with all the resources that you've been able to garner and doing it selflessly.
Okay. Who is the most effective Hispanic politician today?
The most effective Hispanic politician today is Vicente Fox.
Okay.
He has managed to do something in Mexico nobody would even dream of with a pan.
Can you spell his name for us?
Yeah, V-I-C-E-N-T-E, Fox, like Fox 4 News.
And he's the president of...
He's the president of Mexico. He is making a real good stab at abolishing la mordida, or corruption, which, you know, that's why I stay in this country. As bad as it is, la mordida doesn't bite as bad.
Thank you.
Which is the most effective Hispanic political organization?
The most Hispanic political organization? Well, the most Hispanic, the most effective one that really bites the dust and hits the really tough issues and doesn't give a damn is the La Raza. That's La Raza, is it? But the most effective that has all the clout and pomp and circumstance and stands for a lot of big, huge issues and demographics is LULAC.
Okay. What is the most pressing issue facing Hispanics today?
The most pressing issue is definitely education. With education, you don't have to worry about economics, you don't have to worry about law, you don't have to worry about voting rights, you don't have to worry about housing. Because when I bought my house, I bought it right where I-20 was going to be built, because I drew the plans in Dallas. And my house is now worth 300% more than it was worth when I bought it. So it was education, it was training.
Okay. What are the underpinnings of tension between African Americans and Hispanics today?
In Houston, the blacks are being, you know, really harassed by Mexicans, Hispanics. And in Dallas-Fort Worth, Hispanics are being harassed by blacks. So yeah, you know, there is a problem. The problem is we're fighting over what's rightfully ours. There's a big pie, and that pie, if Jesus were here, would be split evenly with everybody, regardless. Race, color, creed, national origin, male or female, you know, it doesn't matter. But because the powers that be have got the bulk of it, then we are, they're making us fight for what's left. And if we joined together and fought with our brothers and sisters who are Asian, with our brothers and sisters who are Pakistani, the brothers and sisters who are from Israel, we would not have to fight. You know, the fight started with the Irish, and then, you know, and then the Japanese, and the fight is a bad fight. We should not fight. We'll lose it.
Okay, and lastly, we'd like to ask you, within the federal court system, do you think that there is any discrimination towards minorities? And if so, do you have any solutions?
There is discrimination towards minorities. As a matter of fact, right now I'm helping a gentleman. It's not the judges so much, it's the court system itself. There's a gentleman that got fired from his work. He's been fighting them for 2 years, and finally went to court, and he didn't have an interpreter. They weren't providing him one, and I talked to the judge, and I said, they're not providing an obvious interpreter. Then I found out they wanted to settle for $1,600, and I said, but he has some civil rights. There is issues with this company, and I got on the phone with the EEOC at Arizona. I said, I need to come talk to you. I'm doing the interpreting, but it looks more complex. And when they heard me say that, the attorney for the other party, while I was talking to the judge about being a pro bono interpreter for them, they offered him $60,000 to settle. And that's how much it's gonna cost him to get his, you know, to get fixed. So the court system, yeah, it's not balanced, because we don't have enough people of either color or people of contact of character that are willing to fight those and equalize the grounds for Hispanics and African Americans. And until you guys get involved and do your bit, you know, listening to me is fine, but you've got to take the message and you've got to take it in your heart, because it's not about me, it's not about you, it's about all of us. We got to survive. What's happening in Belfast, Ireland right now, and what's happening over there with, in Israel and so on, is nothing compared to what will happen if the African Americans and the Mexicans or Hispanics fight. The war will be bloody. And we can do the peace right now.
Thank you, sir. Okay, at this time we have three questions from our audience, and okay, this will conclude the...
Okay, identify yourselves, also ask a question. No, I'm not just kidding.
Okay, our first question, why do you want to represent a town that has made your life quote unquote hell?
Why did Jesus die for us on the cross? Why did he not condemn all the Jews that were crucified him? I'm not Jesus, but that's my example.
Okay. The Good Old Boy Network is very tight in Fort Worth and Arlington. What makes you think you have a chance to win?
I'm winning. They're using my ideas.
Okay. LULAC challenges the thinking that Hispanics, they are all the same. They promote
divisiveness.
They promote divisiveness among us. Can you defend that perception associated with LULAC? What does your association with them add?
Can you read that question again?
Okay. Why don't you just ask the question?
Yeah,
that comes from...
Hurry.
LULAC represents and kind of promotes divisiveness between the Hispanics, whether you're Mexican-American, whether you're an immigrant.
Among the Hispanics, because you know, Puerto Ricans, Cubans,
The Latino community.
Yeah.
But your message here has been somewhat different in that we're all in it together, and how is it that you're associated with LULAC, having that background? And then secondly, is what can you add to maybe change that divisiveness attitude within
me? Well, see, that's a misperception. Because I have here, and I'm going to give it to y'all, in the Civil Rights Package, a referendum between the NAACP to work together on civil rights for each other. It also means not excluding anybody else.
Right.
Okay? Now, there is, we automatically, doctor is Chicano. I'm Mexican. What's the difference? You know, and then there are Tejanos, and there are Pochos, and there are Ibero-Americanos, and there are Latino-Americanos, and there are Hispanics, and you know, heck, we're all in the same race, the human race. And I think but there are factions in every group where we're better than you, or we've got more of this, and we've got, you know, and I think the better off, the better than you think that, you know, is ridiculous. There are fights right now, you know, amongst even LULAC groups. I formed a new LULAC group because this LULAC group doesn't work civil rights. So we formed a LULAC group that wants to work civil rights. They want to do parties. Fine.
Hi, how are you? My name is Camille White, and I'm going to ask you all my questions at once, so you can just answer them. Are you married? Do you have any kids?
I'm available. Are you married?
Yes, I am. Do you have kids? And do you feel that we should go to war? And I'm asking you that question because you said I'm going to go and die for my country. I don't know if this is before you you were studying or got thrown out of the priesthood or what happened. So that's why I have that question. And I was wanting to know basically how much do you spend on your campaigns every time that you run?
Okay. I have two children, and my wife who married me was Mexican like myself, but her parents, her mother wanted all the kids to marry Anglos because she didn't want them to suffer like she suffered. So my wife eventually divorced me in 3 years and married a white Anglo-Saxon air pilot from Carswell Air Force Base.
How much did it cost?
When I ran for mayor against Elsie Odom, four years ago, I spent about $5,000-$7,000, and I got 13% of the vote. Domingo Garcia ran for mayor in Dallas, spent about $250,000, got less than 5% of the vote, and he has a higher percentage of Hispanics. So I say successful I have been, compared to what I've spent. And it depends on what year. Right now, I've got about $1,000 that I've spent on this campaign. No matter how much money, I could look at Tony Sanchez. He spent more than everybody has ever spent in the state, and he didn't win because you have to look at realistically at the forces against you. Okay, that's a perfect example. So I think compared to these two people, I did relatively well. I've spent $500 and I've gotten 10% of the vote.
So, and the next question is, so do you feel we should go to war with Iraq?
I feel this way. If my country goes to war, I'm going to be in favor of winning the war. Okay? I don't think that we have done everything right now. And I don't think the United Nations has helped us to do everything. And I tell you what, just like civil rights, people that violate civil rights, they're real smart. They're smarter than we civil rights activists think we are. They take our time, our resources, and our money and strap them up, go to the back of the line, ask for this request over again. I'm sorry, you know, you're not wearing the right seatbelt, you know, so on and so forth, okay? So Saddam Hussein, Hitler, Mussolini, JF Kennedy, Stalin, the Pope, they're all brilliant people. They're all have charisma. Just because you have charisma doesn't mean you're good. And I think Saddam Hussein is very smart, and I think he's hiding stuff from us.
Lico, you surprised me with the answer on the Center Fox. Maybe if we rephrase it, who is the most effective Mexican-American leader?
The most effective Mexican-American leader. Ay, Diosito Santo, the most effective Mexican-American leader in the state of Texas,
anywhere.
In the country?
Take a pick, all of them.
In all of them, effective, I would say the former HUD Secretary of HUD, House. He's still in there, even though he got pushed and shoved, and a lot of things happened to him.
Indicted and convicted.
Yeah.
Okay, I think there's one more. Quickly.
Was that
Henry Cisneros?
Yes. Quick question.
Pam, quick. My name's Pam Bass, and I know you get around because I've seen you at a few places.
I owe you money?
I've seen you at the UN thing and the League of Women Voters.
Question.
Anyway, what's your website?
Very simple, LICO.TV, LICO.TV. And from there you can go to LicoReyes.com and ArlingtonElection.com. But that LICO.TV will take you to all the other. I do my own websites. Remember, I was a computer program analyst.
Great. Well, Mr. Reyes, this concludes our interview.
He had a question way back there.
Oh, he does?
What you thought about the nomination of Stormer
Miguel Estrada.
Miguel Estrada?
Or do like support?
Our national president supports him. La Raza Unida opposes him. I think that we're happy that they're considering Hispanics. I hope that, like me, that they don't take Oreos and make them into leaders.
Do you think that he's going to at least have his nomination voted up or down?
He's Hispanic, you know, that's a step forward. I just hope that he raises to the occasion of the position.
All right. Well, this concludes our interview. On behalf of our class, Political Science 4319 at the University of Texas at Arlington, I'd like to say thanks to you for your contribution to our efforts.
God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We are saying you didn't voluntarily dated in an address, or where you want us to send you the transcript?
Sure.
Carla, would you make sure that you sign this thing?
Do you need these two?